Greetings and welcome to Baron Crazy's Visions of Horror, Season Number 2, Episode Number 4, covering the week of February 4th through the 10th. We started off the show with a band called Ground Meat. The track was Pathological Silence, found on Facebook and Bandcamp. Okay, so before we get started, a couple of little things to take care of. I know, first, yes, the show is not out on schedule. I understand that. We are working to get that better, and we hopefully correct that in the upcoming weeks. Number two, that I wanted to state, I get this question often, what is the premise of the show? Clearly and very simply, would you trust your friends, your colleagues, work friends, mere strangers, neighbors, people that you don't even know on the internet, to choose movies for you to watch that you could easily obtain to watch through streaming services or maybe through a DVD collection of some sort for you to watch? They choose, you watch these films one a day on average. I mean, that's really what it all comes down to. Do you trust others to see what nightmares, daymares, wonderful sights, or horrific creations that your eyeballs are going to, you know, view, and then your brain is going to have to kind of consume it? That's really the whole entire basis of this. This started as simply me picking what I was watching during the week, if you would. And that was for a Visions of Horror column. Then that kind of got changed around and became, okay, look, just let's kind of focus on anniversary films. Okay. And then that mutated into this, if you would. And this has become very popular with a lot of you out there. And now I find out that other people out there on YouTube and different platforms are doing similar things as to what I saw in the month, or what I did this, or what about that. And I think, okay, that's very interesting. Very, very interesting that you guys are picking up from what I'm doing, and that's fine. So with that being said, that takes care of that question. One last one. I have a friend who, I guess, signed me up for either the Vodka of the Month Club, or they just have decided to spend their money in buying me different vodka brands. I know we did this one just recently, and I guess in the batch there was a second bottle of it. Now, these are small little bottles, the kind you get on the way out of a liquor store, for example. This particular one here is called Cascadian Vodka. Actually, it's a larger bottle than that. There seems to be maybe, I guess, the bottle size between the tiny ones and one of those 750 milliliter bottles. So I'll be drinking this one for quite a while. This is a nice one. I do have to say that. I'm kind of a connoisseur of vodkas. If you didn't know that about me, folks, that is definitely a true statement. I love vodkas. I don't like flavor vodkas. Don't get me wrong. They all got a place. But I just like, you know, good old-fashioned kind of vodkas. So, yes, that's what I'll be telling you each week, what I'll be drinking. So if you wanted to follow along with the script at the hardtimes.com site, you're going down the podcast, you're finding Baron Crazy's Vision of Horror, Season Number 2, Episode 4, link right there. That'll give you all the information about the films, the links, different information. Sometimes there's films in their entirety, sometimes tribute videos, music that is played on the show, again, is provided by the labels, the bands, the PR companies. And if we can, we put videos down. We put all the information we can down for everything that we're supplying on this show. Wow. What an intro. About 4 minutes to give you all that. Let's get into some films now, shall we? All right. So Sunday, February 4th, the film I saw was The Curse of the Komodo from 2004, rated R, 1 hour and 32 minutes in length, celebrating a 20-year anniversary, a horror sci-fi adventure film. The director was Jim Wynorski. The writer was Steve Lashaw. And as for the people who starred in the movie, you know what? I'm not going to try to butcher these names. I probably get some of them right, but I'm not going to get them all right. So let's get the Google Translator to give us a little help.
Tim Abel, Melissa Brussell, William Langlois, Gail Harris, Paul Logan.
All right, thank you very much. The company they put it out was 20th Century Fox Home Entertainment. All right, so a little summary for you all. Genetically engineered Komodo dragons have become ginormous creatures hunting people on a remote tropical island. A small group of scientists must stop the dragons before they escape the island and destroy the rest of the world. Wow, what a feat. Okay, so the internet movie rating for this is 2.9 out of 10. I would give it a 2.5. Release date was February 21st of 2004. Tagline, ready? It's hungry. That's it. That's all we got. No more. This film was referenced in Dino Croc versus Super Gator, a TV movie from 2010, and it was followed by Komodo versus Cobra, another TV movie in 2005. All right, my opinion. Oh, dear God. Okay. I mean, when I say 2.5, I may say 2.6, just to, it's so close to being a DOA, and I know some of you are going, wait, what's a DOA? DOA are reviews that we put on the site from time to time that are the worst films ever. And just to clarify that, people always say, this is the worst movie ever. Bullshit. I'm sorry, I'm calling you out on your bullshit. Until you see the actual worst movies, you can't start saying all these movies out there are the worst movies. I'm sorry, they're not. Trust me, on the hard times, we have reviewed some of the absolute dreadful movies that have ever been released. So this movie, compared to those, now not quite a DOA, but so very close to becoming one. Okay, basically, we have a group of soldiers lands on an island. They're attacked and murdered by a Komodo dragon. Yep, okay. Two men, Hansen and Jason, leave a building surrounded by an electric fence to seek out survivors. They run back to the building, and they find a woman named Rebecca, who is the daughter of the scientist, Nathan, who deactivates the fence, and their assistant, Dawn. And I mean, it just, what I'm saying is going, whoa, Baron, I'm confused. Who's all these people? That's what I'm saying. The people come in and out of this movie faster than anything else that is going on. I mean, it's hard for anybody to keep track of all the characters and how they all are interrelated. That's why I did it in the way I did it. I wanted you to be confused. I know that sounds crazy as hell. Wait a minute. You purposely slammed us with all these character names to confuse us on purpose. Yes, because I wanted you to understand what it's like to watch the movie. And the only way I could do that is by basically bombarding you with numerous character names that I knew that you would probably be sitting there going with, wait a minute. I don't understand. What do all these names have to do with each other? I'm so lost. And that's it. And that's how awful it is in every aspect of this movie. I mean, the CGI is horrible. It really is horrible. Really. The acting is atrocious. The characters are shallow. They're boring. The paper thin. I mean, hell, it's an insult to tissue paper. The monsters, again, the CGI is horrible. They're laughable. And again, I mean, Komodo dragon is on an eating spree. And here's something that's even crazier. It's almost like they weren't gone far enough down this road. They decided to make the saliva from the dragons. And I guess, in a way, if it gets on people, it turns them into some sort of mindless zombie controlled by the dragon. I mean, I don't know. It was like, after a certain point, you're just like, does anyone understand? And I watched it with a few other people. And I actually said, does anyone understand what in the hell we're watching here? And they were just like, huh? What? They were on their phones because they were like, this thing is beyond dreadful and we're supposed to give attention to it. I said, yes, that is the point of the movie, to watch the movie, not to be on your phone. No matter how bad the movie is, my job is to watch the movie. And I'm watching the movie and I'm going with, I don't know what I'm watching. I mean, it was that messed up of a movie. All right, so with that being said, the film can be found on Tubi and also Freevee. And with that, one more thing. If you're new to the show, we either play music before or after each day that goes by with the movie I'm discussing. The song will either be a song that's in the movie, which is a rarity, a song that has the similar of the title in its music, or it's got somehow a connection to it, some wording, some lyrics, something that kind of, what I feel it would go along with this, or almost this is a type of piece of music that should have fit right into the soundtrack. So there's a couple different ways that works. With that being said, we have the band Savage Master with the track Warrior vs. Dragon. The band is found on Facebook and Instagram. Thanks goes out to the label. Let's see here, where is it? I forgot to mention, they're also on Bandcamp. And thanks goes out to the label Shadow Kingdom Records, which is found really all over the net. Just a matter of going out there and looking for it yourselves. So enjoy this track. All right, so we have Monday, February 5th, with the film Night of the Bloody Apes from 1969, rated R, 1 hour and 23 minutes in length. Anniversary of 55 years. This film is a horror crime drama. Before I even get into the director, the writers, and the stars, I do want to note that you know that this movie is definitely a very strange B-movie type of film. All right, so the director was...
Rene Cardona.
And the writers?
Rene Cardona, Rene Cardona Jr.
And some of the cast members.
Jose Elias Moreno, Carlos Lopez Moctezuma, Armando Silvestre, Norma Lazzarino, Agustin Martinez Solares.
Thank you very much, Google Translator. All right, the company that put out the film was Azteca Films. Summary, a doctor tries to save his son's life through a complicated heart transplant operation, the involuntary donor being a gorilla. Eventually, the young man turns into a violent hybrid beast. All right. Rating 4.8 out of 10. Original release date was February 6th of 1969. All right, we've got four taglines for this film. So here we go. If you're unfamiliar, I am a tagline doctor. That means I know how to design taglines for films and can be professionally hired at any given time. If you have a film and you need taglines, you contact the Baron. All right, so a tagline should be between 3 to 5 words. You could steal away with a couple other little tricks, which I have mentioned on previous shows. So here we go. Half man, half beast, all horror. Next one. An orgy of terror. See, again, if the quote or the tagline has an exclamation point or capital letters, I will give the emphasis into it or other punctuation. Nobody sleeps the... Night of the Bloody Apes. And lastly, they rip, they claw, they tear you to pieces. Okay, so there you guys go for those. Trivia. Features footage from an actual human heart transplant operation in two separate scenes. So, you can get your groove on if you like to watch, medical drama shows. Believe it or not, this has been rumored a lot of times that a lot of the gore hounds out there to kind of build up their resistance to the red stuff on the screens, some have actually watched surgeries. It kind of helps them ground themselves. Also, if you're going to go into special effects or sculpting and things like this, a lot of people do say you should take a class on the biology, the muscle tone, the understanding how the muscles are in the face and the arms, whatever that is, and that helps with learning for sculpting and doing special effects. Just something I once picked up being on a set. So anyway, this film is referenced in The Bloody Ape, which was a video that came out in 97. It's also a remake of a film called The Doctor of Doom from 63. Now, my opinion. All right. This is a really cheap, B-rated kind of film, if you would, from Mexican horror. It's totally obscure. It is really obscure. Finding it is easy, believe it or not. Watching it does take a serious commitment. Look, it has the nudity, it has the medical footage, it has women wrestling, it's got cheap gore effects. What the title really means, I really don't know, because it's just that kind of title. It's a weird title. Obviously, it's got to be a translated title. I don't know what the original title was. It really sounds like this is a translated title, and this is what they came up with. I try to figure out why would they call it, the Night of the Bloody Apes, especially when there's not a lot of apes in the movie. 69. I'm thinking, we started the trend there with Night of the Living Dead, so now Night of, whatever. And I think that becomes a trend for occasionally that does happen in certain films. But again, there's a lot of blood. There's a lot of gore. Like I said, there's at least the one ape. Nothing in the film that could really be summed up for the titling. You do have the surgeon transplanting the heart of an ape into his deathly ill son. I do think this has probably been redone in other films since then and suggested in even other ones. You know, you got the guy he portrays with the gorilla is really, really bad. I mean, it's, you know, I don't have much money. How much money do you have? I have $20. Okay, let's do this. And it looks just like that. I mean, it looks like a guy in a gorilla mask running around, attacking people, and that's it. I mean, the concept for the gorilla man's makeup is horrendous. I'll put it this way. Even though what I'm about to name is an animated film, it gives you a connotation. The animated film was an episode of Scooby-Doo with the gorilla man is better than this. Here's one. I'll go further. Trading Places, I think it was, with Dan Aykroyd and Eddie Murphy, I'm not mistaken. Comedy is not my forte in this sense. There's a guy who dresses up in the, you know, proverbial gorilla costume. He looks more real than this. And that's saying something, because that's truly a costume, and the guy wasn't trying to be scary. He just wore that outfit. It's, like I said, it's a crazy movie. It really is. I mean, if you have the time, you watch it. If you don't have the time, don't worry. There's plenty else out there to watch. You're not missing a ton. So the film is available on Prime and Tubi. And with that being said, I thought about this for a while. I have quite a few tracks I could have chosen from for the music and such. But I decided, since this movie is so effed up, let me find a track that's equally, not to say effed up, but has the strangest titling possible. Because I said, well, the title's messed up in a way that doesn't make any sense, and no one can figure it out. And if I can find a song that has a strange titling also, I thought, now, this would be, you know, kismet. This is what you're looking for. So, from the band called Death Ape Disco is the track Death Ape Disco. They're found on Bandcamp and Instagram. Now, also noting, right after that, we're going to be playing a track from Bloody Hammers, which is called Welcome to the Horror Show. That band is found on, basically, they got a .com page, the band's name .com, Facebook, Instagram, and, of course, on Bandcamp. So, enjoy these two tracks. We'll be right back.
thing is wrong, so I behave. The manic priest is waiting, but inside you it's alright, it's okay. Shock and shame is so far out of date. Blame is left on all of you to load your guns and tell the truth.
February 6th, Tuesday. The film was The Horror Show from 1979, a TV movie, also known as, and I hope I get this right, it is known as Die große Horror Show, which means the size of the horror show. So the German pronunciation there for you all. Celebrating a 45-year anniversary, it is a horror thriller documentary. The director, I have no clue how to say this director's name, little help.
Richard Schickel.
Okay, he was also the writer for the film. Now, basically, this film has a host, and that was Anthony Perkins. Now, I say a host because it is one of those horror thriller documentary films, and, of course, with this, he is the host, and then there's a series of films, little clippets, if you would, that are playing in there. Considering like an early form of, I would say, Terror in the Isles, which was a very good documentary. So this is kind of a little bit, comes out a little before that. So if you call, enjoy that. Now, you will see, when you watch this, little snippets of Bud Abbott, Julie Adams, Lionel Atwell, John Carradine, Lon Chaney Jr., Peter Cushing, Boris Karloff, I think Christopher Lee, Janet Leigh, Glenn Strange, and of course Faye Ray. So it was put out by MCA/Universal Pictures, and again, the summary is a history of horror movies hosted by Anthony Perkins and featuring clips of scores of horror and sci-fi classics. Even though if you go on the Internet Movie Database, not all the films are listed, and right here now, I'm not going to list all the movies either. That'll be something for a review. All right, so for the Internet Movie Rating, we got an 8.9 out of 10. I just give it a flat 9. I think it's a good production. The release date for it was February 6th of 1979. And some taglines for you all to enjoy, which are two of them. Let's see if you guys can find the difference in the taglines. They sound similar, so listen carefully. The scariest moments from the scariest movies of all time. Number two. The scariest moments from the greatest shock films of all time. Okay. So, there's a little trivia here. I thought it was kind of interesting. 10 movies that are featured in this documentary have been selected for preservation in the National Film Registry by the Library of Congress for being culturally, historically, or artistically significant. Okay. I mean, now think about it. You know, regardless of your political view, whoever's got the job at the Library of Congress position to pick films out for the registry, that's a cool damn job to have. Going, hey, look, what's your job? I get to pick out movies all day and think about them and see which ones are the best to be added. Okay. Sounds like a pristine job. I mean, I think anybody would want that job. All right, so references. There's quite a few to go through. Let me change that. References and then features. So we got references. Phantom of the Opera from 1925 and, of course, Psycho. Now, it features The Cabinet of Dr. Caligari. I know I just butchered that, so excuse me, but 1920. Nosferatu, 22. The Hunchback of Notre Dame, 23. The Phantom of the Opera from 25. Dracula from 31. Actually, they note in here, and I should note this too, the Dracula and the Spanish variation, also from 31. Frankenstein, also from 31. Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde from 31. The Mummy from 32. King Kong, 33, Invisible Man, 33, The Bride of Frankenstein, 35, Werewolf of London, The Wolfman, that one was from 41, The Son of Dracula, The House of Dracula, Alvin Costello, Meet Frankenstein, The Creature from the Black Lagoon, The Incredible Shrinking Man, The Horror of Dracula, Return of the Fly, Psycho, The Birds, The Kiss of the Vampire, Eye of the Cat, Willard, Jaws, and The Omen. Wow, is that enough for you all? Now, what I probably find most appealing about this is the enormous amount of little snippets and clips that are feature a wealth of data there, vast array of popular movies of then. You got to remember, it came when it came out. It's not going to have everything that the modern ones have, so be aware of that, okay? I hate reading comments and go, well, it doesn't have Saw in it. Okay, but look when the film came out. Saw comes out, 2004? And you're talking about a film that was made at least 10 to 20 years prior to it. So, you know, no offense, wise up a little bit. A lot of this is great for accessing what is out there in classic horror. If you're curious about learning about the history of horror, it does really give those goods to deliver. I think Perkins does a fantastic job in it. A perfect choice. And that's always something that's really important in these. You want to find that actor or actress that can really, more than just, read from a teleprompter or just read, from some script, but they have that natural ability to converse with the audience, to show their love affair and their passion. I mean, people always ask me, Baron, why aren't you ever pegged to do these things? I don't know. I really don't know. So I think I can convey my love affair with the genre in a nice, appealing manner that everybody would enjoy. Oh, wait. I do that now. I do that at the Baron's Crypt and with this show. Yeah. Okay, anyway, there are a lot of memorable moments in the film, so I would definitely suggest taking some time, get away, feature this a little bit. There's maybe some spots they do drag on a little bit longer, but again, you got to see who put out the film, and you know that they're going to cater to certain elements a little bit more than other things. Now, where is it found? You can go to YouTube and find the full movie. Now, I will let you know that some of the full movies out there do contain commercial breaks in them. Not commercials from YouTube, but commercials from, like, recorded off of television, if you would, and they contain certain commercials in them. So be aware of that. Others, the one I put down, just has subtitles to it in Spanish, but it's all in English. So be happy with that. And with that being said, we're going to play another track here. It's going to be Daniel Deluxe with the track Night Stalker, found through Instagram and Bandcamp. And thanks is going to go out to the label Graveyard Calling, found on Bandcamp, Instagram, and Facebook. Welcome to Wednesday, February 7th. The film I saw for this day, now this is going to take a moment to set this up because it's just not going to be that easy. What I did here, what was, I guess, more or less suggested to me, was to binge watch the entire first season of Kolchak the Night Stalker from 1974. Now, let me just state again, this is rated PG, TV PG, and about 51 minutes per episode on average, if you would. And that again, it varies. So, why am I bringing this up? Well, first of all, if you listen to the Baron's Crypt, I did, for the topic, Kolchak, The Night Stalker, Season 1. The reason I covered it there is that there's about 20-some episodes in Season 1, and there's no way to nicely and politely cover all that on one Vision of Horror. I mean, when I discussed it on the Baron's Crypt, it was a 31-minute segment. So, you know, I went over a few episodes in it to just let you know. Now, here I am discussing it again, and how did this come about? Basically, this was an interesting recommendation, so I just said, why don't you just cover the entire season one of The Night Stalker? And, you know, you think about this at first, yeah, sure, and then you're like, oh my God, wait a minute. That's 20 episodes at basically an hour each. That's 20 hours of watching this. It was a fun ride. Don't get me wrong. I like finding some of the actors that I remember seeing in this series a long time ago. It's really great. I'm looking forward to writing the article about this. And again, this is going to be an article. It's not just going to be a review because I couldn't do it. I was like, do I do it by episode? I guess I could review each episode, but that would take, you know, forever, I guess, maybe to get that done. Maybe I write a whole, you know, year worth of work. I don't really know yet. I still go back and forth on it. So I don't know whether I should do the season and one scoop, or do I break it down by episode? And some people say, well, listen, why don't you break it down by the ones you love the most and then write down a review of the whole thing with those maybe you didn't like as much. And I thought, well, that's a good suggestion. That could be a real fun thing to do throughout this year. Anyway, celebrating a 50-year anniversary, horror mystery thriller. The director was Don Wise, Alan Barron, nice name, Alexander Grassoff, Michael Caffey, and Gordon Hessler. That's right, Gordon Hessler. Obviously, there was other directors involved in it, too. The writers, well, that would be Jeffrey Grant Rice, David Chase, Randolph Bouchet, John Huff, L. Period Ford. Now, I'll just spell this one. N-E-A-L-E, Bill Period Ballinger. Okay, now, as for who it stars, Darren McGavin, Simon Oakland, Jack Greenage, also noted guest stars in some of the episodes. Tom Skerritt, Dick Van Patten, Elizabeth Brooks, Julie Adams, Anita Talbot, Carol Jones, who you may have known as Morticia Adams, Andrew Pine, and so many more. Now, this was originally on the ABC network. Again, only lasted about 2 seasons, sadly. The Internet Movie Database rating for it is an 8.4 on average. So I actually kind of confirmed that by taking all the episodes, adding them together, and coming up with the average rating. Release date for it was the first episode, September 13th of 1974, which was a Friday the 13th. Taglines. Here we go. One man's quest to uncover the truth. All right. And the other one is television's greatest chiller movie becomes a weekly series. All right. I didn't really spend a lot of time on trivia that you can listen to over at the Horror Times show, The Baron's Crypt, which has just aired, so you guys can check that out. It was remade as Night Stalker, the TV series, in 2005. That lasted 2006. Again, just 2-season run. spinoff. We had the Kolchak Crackle of Death, a TV movie in 74, and Kolchak the Demon and the Mummy in 75. Now, it's referenced in Barracuda from 78, Dead End from 85, Scream 3 in 2000, The Red Right Hand in 2001, and The Headless Horseman in 2007. It follows the Night Stalker TV movie from 72 and the Night Strangler from 73. Okay, so my opinion. This, I always liked the Night Stalker. I don't know why, I found it to be really cool. I like the adventures. I like how Kolchak is this kind of monster hunter, but he's always after the story. And he always seems to either fail in what he's trying to do to get publicity, but he always seems to be able to conquer the monster. And sadly, it only lasted basically two seasons, if you would. What I do find interesting about this, and tell me if I'm right or wrong in my assumption that I'm making here, but doesn't the X-Files and this sound awful a lot alike? I mean, they do. You have monsters, we have urban legends, we have all these things. And Spooky Mulder from the X-Files, who was always investigating these kind of things. So I think a lot of times, these two things, you know, almost like, you know, obviously Kolchak came first. And I think it inspired, in a way, the X-Files. Because the X-Files, we got monsters, right? We got Bigfoot, we got the Yeti, we got aliens, we got doppelgangers. We have all these different things, psychic phenomena. All these things that are discussed in Kolchak are there. It's really strange. It really is. And I really, really, really believe deep down that these two have this weird universe amongst themselves. Don't really see a lot of people making the connection. So either A, I'm completely wrong about it, or B, I'm right on the mark, and people just are now going to be going, yes, I believe this, and they're going to be saying it. But here's the thing. Where did you hear it first? You heard it from me. Now, maybe someone else didn't make a mention of it. I don't know. But what I can tell you is that I find it to be, very similar. And again, I liked it. I mean, I found Carl to be great. Simon is fantastic and as the editor. And again, it may not really mean a lot to a lot of the younger audiences today because it deals with something called a newspaper. I know. Teletypes. Whoa. A typewriter, which I always find also very, very interesting. When the thing starts, we see Kolchak typing away a lot of times on his typewriter. What other famous television show that was on for many seasons involving a mystery writer starts with a typewriter? Murder, She Wrote. Interesting. Murder, She Wrote, typewriter. Kolchak, typewriter. That's how it starts. It's kind of an interesting little way that happens. Just a curious little thought pops into the head, right? But again, a lot of modern audiences may not really want to watch this. It is kind of dated in certain places. But if you're a fan of a lot of the a lot of the actors who played character roles in here, then you might find this of interest. I mean, The Devil's Platform is probably one of my favorites with Tom Skerritt in it, who, by the way, would go on to state that he never, ever remembered acting in that particular episode, which is kind of weird. You did do it. You're on screen, but he would deny that. No, I never did it. And then he would see himself there and be like, well, look at that. I don't remember it at all. So it's an interesting time to learn about different people's careers. All right. So with that being said, Kolchak is found on Peacock. Now, there is really no actual trailer for episode one. You can find a lot of these episodes on YouTube scattered amongst everything else. What I did put down was a tribute video with the theme song, so you guys can enjoy that. I do want to mention that also on this day, I saw the Gansfield Haunting 2014 and the Arkham Sanitarium Soul Eater, also from 2014. These were two films I had previously seen and will be listed in our Revisiting Past Horrors, is where that's another column I write on the Horror Times. in which I go back and I watch these films, celebrating an anniversary usually, that I'm going back and seeing now, do I change my viewpoints of when I originally reviewed it? You know, most writers, they review something and they move along, they never revisit it. I am revisiting it. Why? Because in our genre, a couple things are happening. We reboot things, we retell stories, we re-investigate a story. So why not have myself be honest, go back, watch that movie, and look at the review and go, do I still think the same way? Or has my viewing habits changed and become more mature and I understand different techniques and different styles more in depth? And do I see this film differently? That's when you're being honest with yourself. That's when you're being truly, truly honest with yourself as a writer and with your own passion for the genre. All right, with that being said, we're going to be playing actually two tracks. First off is going to be Cobra Cult with the track Late Night Adventure. I wanted to play this track because I always thought of Kolchak and Late Night Adventures, and that's usually when people would watch these episodes. The band is found on Bandcamp, Facebook, and Instagram. Thanks goes out to the PR company, GMR. Also, we're going to be playing a piece of music from Brandon. Now, I never get Brandon's last name right, so I'm going to spell it. It's F-I-E-C-H-T-E-R. Count Dracula is the track. His music is found on Bandcamp and Twitter and, of course, on Facebook. So enjoy these tracks. We'll be right back. Welcome to February 8th, Thursday. The film I saw was Dracula, 1974, TV movie, rated TV-14. 1 hour and 38 minutes in length. Celebrating a 50-year anniversary. The genres? Well, that would be horror and drama. Director was Dan Curtis. The writers would be Richard Matheson, and the source material coming from Bram Stoker. It stars Jack Palance, Simon Ward, Nigel Davenport. Company put it out was CBS. Summary, Dracula is searching for a woman who looks like his long-dead wife. Rating was a 6.2 out of 10. I would give it a flat 6. Release date for it was February 8th of 1974. There are no taglines. Location that you can visit, actually, is Trakoskan Castle in Croatia. So be aware of that. And I did put down a link that you could actually go and research more information on. So be aware of that, too. The film is referenced in Dracula Untold from 2014. It was featured in The Trail of Dracula from 2017. Now, this film is a variation of the following movies. Nosferatu from 22, Dracula from 31, The Horror of Dracula, The Living Corpse, The Count Dracula, Blackula, Dracula, the TV movie from 72. Then we've got and there's a lengthy list here. I'm not going to do the entire list, guys. It's too much. Blood for Dracula from 74, Count Dracula TV movie from 77, Nosferatu the Vampire, Dracula, Bram Stoker's Dracula, it says 92, Dracula 2000, Dracula TV series starting from 2002, Dracula TV movie 2006, and Dracula 3D, and then of course Dracula the Impaler from 2013. Now, enough Dracula for you? I hope so. But let's get into my opinion on this particular movie. Well, let's see. Having Jack Palance as Dracula, well, it's an interesting choice, to say the least. Let me put it this way. If you're willing to accept his look, and he acts nothing like any one of the true Draculas from either 31 or, you know, from obviously 22. There's no words being spoken, but he doesn't look like, you know, Dracula at all. Yeah, I guess you could, you know, find him appealing for that. There's one problem. I found that he tended to overact in the role. There's just a way to do it, and then there's a way not to do it. And I really get this sense that he's being over dramatic at times in there, and that he's just going with, oh, this is how I am. This is how I'm going to portray this. And I just found it that maybe a little research of to how the classic variations are done would be good. You can make it your own, don't get me wrong, but there should still be a little bit of consistency in it, okay? This is a classic variation of the Bram Stoker's novel, so I think that's very good. It tries to stay pretty close to the storyline. All the stories do, from time to time, take a little bit of liberty. It's been once discussed. If you were going to film the Bram Stoker's book straight through without any changes, what would that be like? That would be like a mini movie, a mini TV series, if you would. You're talking probably 3 days, a total of 6 hours in all, maybe 8, just to get it done right. That could be really too much for anybody to take. Unless you made it a TV series. All right, so it's got that 70s vibe to it. It's got that dark horror atmosphere also. It's highly effective. It's made for TV, so it does miss, and I know this is not going to come out right, but it's missing that subtle gothic eroticism, if you would. I mean, let's face it, the vampire, for the most part, is that type of creature. It has a sexual component to it, and television does not allow for that unless that is cable of some sort, you know, like True Blood would have done. But this was regular TV. You know, this is CBS. So you can't have that. And that was really tough on people. So that becomes a little of a sticking point. But that dark atmosphere works. It does add the tension, except the problem becomes, again, you're going to have a commercial break in there. You can tell when it's coming. That's the other problem. You know when that break is coming because you can tell how the scenes are working themselves out. Oh, we're ramping up and we're going to have a break. And then we go back in. So that is something you have to just get aware of and be comfortable with. The film is found on Freevee, Peacock, Plex, Pluto, and Tubi. So basically it's found everywhere. And that being said, we're going to be playing another track here from the band called Mystic Prophecy, and the track is called Dracula. They are found on Facebook, Instagram, and their band's name.net. Thanks goes out to Rock of Angel Records, found on Facebook, Instagram, and of course Bandcamp. Enjoy.
The dark is black, thirsty for your blood, ready for the final last attack. His eyes red like fire, his blood cold as ice. Hot blood is on desire, one sees it twice, and your soul's the price. Dracula, soul on fire, his blood cold as ice. Dracula, blood desire, evil legend, the devil never dies. Rising higher, fly through the darkest black. Dracula, kill desire, bloodlust, attack, attack, attack. They terrorize you in your sleepless nights, hypnotized, drown in blood before you die. A cross, a silver bullet, Baba Peaches on the ground. How can you face this demon when he comes around? Forever unbound. Dracula, soul on fire, his blood cool as ice. Dracula, blood desire, evil legend, the devil never dies. Dracula, rising higher, fly through the darkest black. Dracula, kill desire.
Beautiful and cruel at once, never mind, never in love. not far away. She appears, but she won't stay. She gives you hope, then burns you up. It's like a scary play. Addicted to her presence here, a succubus that I won't hear. A summoning takes place again, just to see her what I can. A haunted presence in my dreams. A devil took control of me. She's a ghost coming for me. She's a ghost.
We noticed I slipped another track in there from the band called The Other, with the track being She's a Ghost. And they are found through Facebook and Instagram. Now, the reason I've done that, of course, was to also note that on February the 9th, we didn't have any films. Again, I'm working on multiple fundraisers, and they just took it took a lot of time away, and I couldn't do everything, so I do give my sincere apologies for not watching any horror films on February 9th. So, what did I watch on February 10th, Saturday? Well, I watched a classic one from 1944, The Uninvited. This is not rated, 1 hour and 39 minutes. It's celebrating an anniversary of 80 years. It's a horror mystery fantasy film. The director was Lewis Allen. The writers for this were Dottie Smith, Frank Partoz, and Dorothy Mercado. It stars Ray Milland, Ruth Hussey, and Donald Crisp. Come, they put it out with Paramount Pictures. Now, the summary, was a composer and his sister discovered that the reason they're able to purchase a beautiful Gothic Seacoast mansion very cheaply is because of the unsavory past that exists with the house's history and, of course, within its walls. All right, so the rating for this is a 7.2 out of 10. I give it probably a 7 flat. A release date was February 10th of 1944. Now, we do have quite a few taglines, and many of them are for, obviously, print. That's how things got advertised back in 44, so be aware of that. Now, I'm not going to tell you where all these print ads come from, because face it, Idaho, Texas, Indiana, you get the point. They're from a lot of different states, and there's a lot of different kind. What I am going to do is I am going to read them to you in the style that they're printed. So again, in caps, I will be shouting, but I want you to be aware I'm not shouting at you. I am merely pronunciating these in the clearest form I can do. I have to state that because I've gotten the message from somebody out there that says, why do you shout at your audience? Again, I'm not shouting at you. I'm reading the tagline with the emphasis that is required. Here we go. The greatest chiller of the year. All right. The mysterious picture, yet one of the best productions of this year. Next. Can the evil power of a bitter spirit project itself from the unknown into the realm of the living? You'll find out when you see the uninvited. Next, mystery, suspense. Next one, the strangest, the most haunting love story since Rebecca. All right, and lastly there, from the popular mystery romance since Rebecca. Just to let you know, Rebecca was a Alfred Hitchcock film from 1940. So they were trying to play on the type of audience that would like Rebecca. If you like Rebecca, you're going to like this movie. That's just how they were trying to kind of swing it there. The location for this, a lot of the scenes, was done in Wrigley Mansion, found in Phoenix, Arizona. And I put down a link to this. Again, from time to time, there are tours available to go there, to be there. I don't know if you can stay. Some places are different from others. But it's something to look into if you're traveling. I mean, look, if you remember, we talked about Kingdom of the Spiders, I think, the week prior to this, in Arizona. And here's another film that was based in Arizona. So again, so maybe you can make it a package deal for yourself to go to these couple places. All right, little trivia for you all. Now, when I read this first one, it's not all right, I want to go over the trivia items here. First off, I read this one that was on the Internet Movie Database, and it's actually incorrect. It doesn't have the right premise to it. So Paramount added special effects to the film, having decided at the last moment to emphasize the supernatural premise. These effects were later removed by censors when the film was distributed in England. None of that is actually correct. Let me explain. So during the film, kind of testing it with audience and testing it with other people, Paramount decides to add a special effects element because the U.S. audience is having trouble understanding the supernatural element when they don't see anything on the screen. Therefore, they drill these little holes with these little tubes of air and powder in them. So in one of the scenes where you see the people walking up the stairs and you see this kind of figure that's a white mist, if you would, what's happening is air is being pumped through at a very strong force, and poof, this air is forcing out this little powder, if you would, and boom, there you go. So it kind of gives this illusion. They do a couple other tricks, so it doesn't just look like, you know, powder in the air, but they do a couple tricks to it. And therefore, now I see the ghost. It's a white mist. I get it now. Okay. The problem was, over in England, it wasn't the censors that took it out. No. The British audience thoroughly understood what the ghost was and didn't need that. They found that funny. They found that laughable. So they removed that because they saw that as a complete joke. That's what happened. That's the real thing. Just to kind of let you know. Now, this was among the first Hollywood feature films to portray a haunting as an authentic supernatural event. Previously, ghost stories had the ghost as a comedy, such as in Hold That Ghost or Ghost Breakers. This film is based off the novel of Uneasy Freehold by Dorothy McCardle, was published in 1941. Now, I'm kind of saving this one last item here, truly for the last, because it is, a lot of people around here basically figure I shouldn't touch on it, because it's considered highly, highly controversial. So, with that being said, I am going to touch on it. And the reason I'm going to touch on it is because in cinema, as both a horror historian and a lover of the horror cinema, we must sometimes revisit difficult subjects or people's perceived concepts of films because it's important that we never repeat these things again. Now, I'm going to read some of this to you, and then I'm going to break it down because I figure that's maybe the best way to do this. All right, the film drew some criticism for its lesbian undertones in the Miss Holloway character, which was portrayed by Cornelia or Otis Skinner. The letter written in 1944 by Father Brendan of the Catholic Legion of Decency to Will Hayes, Hollywood's head censor, said that large audiences of questionable types attended this film at unusual hours, drawn by certain erotic and esoteric elements in the film. The letter warned to guard against such subject matter on the screen in the future. Okay, let's break that down in a couple pieces. First of all, it's 1944. You already know from that concept what is acceptable and what is not. You can already start to figure that out from that paragraph I read. I don't believe that. That is not my viewpoint at all. I am just merely trying to translate to you what happened in 44 to today. All right? That is not to criticize this movie in any way, shape, or form. Don't do that. This is extraneous. This is what other people were believing. All right. So, you had two groups that were more powerful and more controlling than the MPAA is today. Those groups were the Catholic Legion of Decency and then the Hays Code. So you had to get through hurdle one of the Catholic League first. That was number one. Your script needed literally to be submitted to them first. They would go through with a red pen, cross, cross, cross out, cross, cross, cross out, change, change, circles, all that. Hand it back to you. Once you got past them and you resubmitted the script, you then had to submit the script to the Hays Code. They would also look at it. Then you got to film it. And then through this process, the Hays Codes would then come back through and go, nope, 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 and there you go. And that was basically how you got your film made. Now, what I find most interesting is they were stating here that large audiences of questionable types would attend this film at unusual hours. Now think about that. That means that they had people there at these theaters watching other people, looking for that type. You know, that type. They were looking for that type of person who was coming to the theater late and an unusual time to watch this movie. And they were saying that this was the reason why this was happening, that there was this weird eroticism in the film. So right now, I have you all enticed out there to watch this movie. If you are truly both a lover of cinema, you enjoy mysterious type of horror films, okay, with horror elements in them, and you like a good supernatural tale, and finally you like looking at films from, you know, then with today's eyes, you're into that kind of thing, then this right here is right up your alley. You are going to get into this because this is something that is going to really make you go, is it really there, or is it suggested in there, or something else? So gives you a couple different options for you guys to look at, so you can be aware of all that. All right, with that being said, the film is referenced in Poltergeist from 1982. My opinion, obviously, you guys know, if you're in a mood for a good, chilling, well-plotted, atmospheric mystery, you're here. I think the film is really good. I think it's got a lot of elements into it. The seance that's done really well in the movie, the ghostly atmospheres, the haunting sounds. So much that happens in this movie, excuse me, we can see carried over into films of today. We do. I mean, you watch this, you'll be like, oh, wow. I see this in this movie. I've seen that in that movie. And you're just going to be picking it out and going with, wow, I see so many references. And it's amazing that the Intermovie Database site only says that this film's been referenced in Poltergeist. It's not actually correct. I mean, maybe directly. But the scenes and the elements that are occurring in the movie, oh, I'm so sorry. They have been used multiple times over, you know, increasing on the techniques and such. So I think you should be aware of that. The film is found on DVD from the Crichton Collection, which I have a copy of. And with that, I figured you guys might be interested. So I put the Amazon link down so you guys can go and find the film yourselves. I don't get any money from that. I just put the link down so you guys can go and if you want to buy it or rent it or whatever, it's right there for you all. With that being said, we're going to play two tracks on the way out of our show for this week. We've got from Retro Synth. It is going to be the artist Power Walker with the track Uninvited Guest. The artist is found on SoundCloud and also through Bandcamp, and things goes out to the label Retro Synth Records, found on Bandcamp and Facebook. And of course, then it's the band Envenom, which is found on Facebook and also on Bandcamp. So thank you for listening to our show this week. Hopefully we get back on a better schedule with that. And enjoy the nightmares out there. Let them affect your nightmares, your daymares. Let these horror movies, you know, take your minds, corrupt them, or fascinate them to create new horrors. With always, our motto is, the extreme has a lasting impression, so go for the extreme. Thanks. We'll be right back.
don't care who's gonna lose or win. Listen to this and I'll tell you something.